Hey, greetings. Welcome aboard the Andy and Amanda program. My name is Andy Kimball from California. We have Amanda Love, a co-host from the UK. Amanda's on board, I believe.
Sure right? Do. Yeah, in. I'm here, darling.
We have, and live from Hawaii, our special VIP guest on our program that you've heard all these weeks is...
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh, no. Direct from Honolulu, Hawaii, is Chet.
God, you must
get the timing eventually.
God, let's do it again. All right. And our VIP guest on our program, the Andy and Amanda Show, live from Hawaii, is...
And live from Honolulu is Chet.
There we go. We got it this time, and of course, Cornell Butler, our show coordinator, live with us today from Delaware. We're all over the world.
Hello.
Hey, Cornell.
What a Delaware.
We're all over the world, folks, and actually, we're not. I'm sitting here in Los Angeles, California. I'm not all over the world. I'm right here, all cozy in our studios in the Coast to Coast show in Los Angeles. Hey, Amanda, how you doing, babes? How's it going over there?
I'm doing good, sweetheart. Yeah, it's going.
It's going. That's good. What's the latest out there in the UK? What's going on in Europe?
Okay, well, we got a few things to cover. So, our Prime Minister Boris Johnson tweeted a message to warn people who would be forming Christmas bubbles to minimise contact
Christmas
with. Yes, Christmas bubbles, everyone. You can just go outside and blow bubbles and join together. No, I'm just kidding. But
they come in a bottle.
Yeah, right. So
a
Christmas
little wand.
Bubble for a Christmas bubble for anybody who's not aware is something you've been allowed to form. It's like a group or a couple of people that you're allowed to legally have contact with during the COVID situation. So to minimise contact with, he's basically said that people who would be forming these Christmas bubbles are to minimize their contact with others outside of their households as of today leading up to Christmas, because everyone is frightened to death that getting together with many family members is going to cause this massive spike in COVID spread. So being seriously considered like a full lockdown like we had in March, with the increasing amount of cases here since the drop a couple of weeks ago. So Northern Ireland will be entering a tough six-week lockdown on the 26th, and Wales will begin theirs also on the 28th. And although not answering clearly as to whether England will be going into a lockdown, Boris said that nobody wants that, but the infection rates have increased in the last few weeks, so we shall see what happens there. And then going on to Brexit, I hate this part, I really do. Brexit,
yeah, really.
It's tedious now. There's tension leading up to the fast approaching deadline for the deal between the UK and the EU, which is not more moved forward like both the UK and EU had hoped. So without a deal, both sides would begin trading on World Trade Organization terms. So this would mean that taxes, tariffs, etc. would come into effect and could raise the cost of imported foods and goods. So as we know, one of the key points in a deal with the EU has been fishing rights. And the UK is hoping to get some of that business back, as currently countries like France fish on UK waters and catch around 600 million worth of fish a year. And so the EU is pushing us for maximum access for their boats so that they can continue operating in UK waters. So after January the 1st, we're going to be prioritising our own boats. So it's been tricky ground to tread on regarding where you can fish and what you can catch. But, you know, just hearing those words, boys, the whole thing sounds preposterous, like how us humans need to own everything and then battle out who owns what. And I know it's been that way for hundreds of years, but, you know, it's crazy. And the other thing that I discussed recently on the show was the Windrush incident, where you may recall the scandal that the UK citizens from the Caribbean experienced when they emigrated here. This happened many years later after settling here in the UK, and they were children who had come here with their parents and granted indefinite leave to remain in 1971, but were facing deportation back in 2012 under Theresa May's leadership, and the scandal became public in 2018. So it has just been announced that they are to be awarded payments ranging from £250 to £10,000, and the maximum £10,000 to £100,000. But sadly, it was reported last month that 9 people had died while awaiting payments from the compensation scheme that was set up for the victims.
Oh,
so it's a very sad story, and my heart goes out to them for this country's mistakes. Mm. Not nice. Not nice. I feel for them.
No. By all means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. What's going on over there? I want to
know. Well, our, the two, headline news items are going to just go into a little bit here. One is the coronavirus numbers are just, they've been through the roof and they're going through the, beyond the roof. They're going through the high-rise roof. Here in Los Angeles, Southern California, yeah. there are no ICU beds. There's not one to be found. There's not one ICU bed anywhere. There.
Oh my goodness!
It's 3,500 people died yesterday in the United States. I mean, all-time high. It's just been absolutely ridiculous. It's been crazy. Yeah. And of course, we're talking about that. We're talking about the absence of the president. Where's he been? And what the folks are toying with, what they're, what are they doing? They're just playing with this thing like it doesn't exist. We're going to hear from, Dr. John Hicks. He is the, he manages the ER at the University of Minnesota Medical Center, who's hands on with this, and just kind of get his take from where he, his position as a emergency room physician. Of where they're battling and how they're battling this thing. Let's listen to Dr. John Hicks.
Being surrounded by death every day in the critical care units in a way that we had not previously experienced, and having patients so isolated from family members, and often with nursing staff being the only bridge between a dying patient and their family and the outside world, put tremendous stresses on all levels of care providers. I'm very worried we're going to have a prolonged tail here of a lot of providers just flat out leaving the profession.
You know what? It's getting, the workers are just working, overtime, double shifts, worn out, facing death every day they go to work. And we have a president who said this about
being surrounded by death every day in the critical care.
He did not say that. That was Dr. Hicks.
Repeating his words.
He was just repeating.
He said, "Go ask China."
He said, "He said
the people are sick."
His absence has been noted here. I mean, he's just, he's running around trying to convince people that he should stay in office for another job to do a job that he's not doing. By Russia, we were attacked. We have thousands of people dying every day with the coronavirus. We have a stimulus bill that he's just, standing away from, not commenting, not doing anything to try to push this thing through and get help where it's needed. He's just been absolutely absent. The only thing he's speaking about, the only thing we hear him talking about is how he won this election by a landslide, when in fact he lost. We all know he lost. He lost big. It's just unbelievable to me. It really
are we clear?
Yeah, unfortunately, we are.
I think we are. Yeah, we are, aren't we, Andy? Yeah.
We're quite clear. We really are. Yeah, yeah.
I saw that the U.S. Vice President Pence had the injection live on television.
Yes, he did.
Vaccine.
Yeah.
And that Trump didn't show up.
No, he didn't have. He wasn't assigned a time to get his yet. Nobody can quite figure out what the issue is there. One comment was that he just thinks that this thing needs to go out to the frontline health, care providers and workers before he gets it. But, Dr. Sanjay Gupta from CNN, the medical correspondent, got it this morning. Mike Pence got it this morning. Mike Pence's wife got it this morning. So that's really not clear as to what, what the exact situation is with him not getting it yet. We don't know. But I'll tell you this, though. Mike Pence was is, till January 20th, the head of the White House task force regarding the coronavirus. You know, this whole thing is supposed to be under his leadership. His top advisor, somebody by the name of Olivia Troy, she's the former Pence Task Force advisor on the coronavirus, responded to an op-ed that Mike Pence wrote in October in the Wall Street Journal, where he said outright and quite to the point, at point-blank range more or less, that there would not be a second wave of the coronavirus, that this thing will disappear. It's going to go away. And Olivia Troy finally came out and spoke about that. Let's hear from her now.
He was upset. He was upset at the headline on it, and he was upset at the public backlash on it. But quite frankly, I don't know what else he would have expected, right? I mean, we knew it was going to, well, those of us who were saying, this is ridiculous, including Dr. Birx, knew that this was going to be insane when we were watching case numbers spike. And that following week, I remember that very vividly, the numbers soared in the South. And that was really, from what I recall, the turning point for the messaging and everything, where there was a full-on full-court press to pressure people to open up. And that's when you see the White House pressure governors, you see the president getting on the calls, and he's saying, you know, you've got to get in line. And he, you know, tells the Republicans, you've got to get in line on this. You've got to back this. It's about the economy. You've got the election coming up. You know, I grieve every day for what's happening in this country and how much hurt is happening. I carry that with me, and I think back to every moment of the task force and a lot of really hard situations that happened behind the scenes. And it is infuriating to me. It is also just devastating to me that these people don't care. And, you know, they've never cared. Some of these people never took it seriously. They never thought it was real. And their behavior was always cavalier, which made it impossible for those of us and experts like Dr. Fauci and others on the task force who were trying to actively do the right thing. But it was impossible, given the fact that this is a White House that was never going to accept and take it seriously, because they knew that they were on the losing end on it. And it's just it's tragic. You know, you can't be the head of the coronavirus task force, and especially more recently. I've been appalled at his behavior in going along with this whole machine, you know, with the rallies as it got closer, and with staff getting infected and there being outbreaks and these events that continue and the holiday parties. I don't know how you can morally look yourself in the mirror and say this is okay. I mean, but at the end of the day, I know who his boss is, and I know that he has always catered to that fact, and I know that he is in a tough situation. But at some point, when people are dying and you're responsible for the protection of the country, you really have a responsibility to take a stand.
You sure do.
Yeah, I agree with that statement completely.
Yeah, you really, and that comes from you know, Mike Pence's top advisor from the Corona Task Force, who of course resigned subsequent to that Wall Street Journal op-ed coming out, where Trump, but Pence is reiterating Trump's words, obviously, that this thing was going to come to an end, and you know, it's just unbelievable. We've reached, you know, just an incredible milestone in the amount of deaths. 323,807 people died.
Wow.
Just yesterday, between the last 24 hours, there's been 248,000 new cases, 2,700 new deaths today, 3,400 deaths yesterday. These are people dying directly from the coronavirus. So I started thinking about this, and here's what I started thinking about. Not that anybody really wants to cares, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And we've talked about this too, but just think about this for a minute. So Donald Trump is informed about this virus and its potential horrific consequences in January, sometime in January, if not before, but at least January. February 8th, Bob Woodward interviews him where he says, quote unquote, "This is a bad one, Bob," where Trump says and acknowledges that this virus does not discriminate. It doesn't know from young from old, black from white. It doesn't know. It'll attack anybody who can get it. It can integrate and infect. And then he gets on TV in March and says that this thing is going to magically disappear. There's only 15 cases. We've got it under control. Then next time he gets on TV and he says in April, when the weather starts getting warmer, this thing, it doesn't like warm weather. It doesn't like the heat. It's going to go away. This, by summertime, it'll be fine. Right? Yeah. 320,000 people died from this. And here's my question. He is the leader of the United States of America. His top job, his number one responsibility is to guarantee the safety of its citizens. Either military conflict, or this is another type of war. This is a war against this virus.
Yes.
He knew it, and he let it happen. Is there a potential? Probably not. I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to call some constitutional lawyers, people who have expertise in this, who will probably say, no, you can't do that. But just in concept, is there potential for a class action suit from those families, those friends, those people who were affected by these 320,807 deaths? The president knew about them, and there's no question about it. If he'd gotten in front of that podium back then, instead of saying it's going to disappear and we've got 15 cases we've got under control, if he had said, folks, we have a real, real problem on our hand that we're all going to have to confront, and here's what it is, and from the podium said, everybody's got to wear a mask. I can't enforce what the states do. The governors and the mayors have to do that. But what I would suggest is that we mandate that everybody wear a mask in this country till further notice. You don't go out. You wash your hands. Or when you do out, you wear that mask. Do you know if that had been the policy, that there would be tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people who died. They'd still be walking the earth and be getting ready to celebrate Christmas next week.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
It's so sad. It's so sad the way he handled the whole thing and then played it off like, well, it's nothing, you know. Trust me, I know what I'm talking about. Everything was going against him and proven he was wrong time and time again, but he still continued on that path of arrogance.
Yeah.
This is based on a conversation that got leaked between Trump and Bob Woodward from back in February.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, Bob Woodward is just as guilty as Trump. And what other media people knew about this? Certainly China did and was telling the world about it. It's not just Trump.
No,
but Bob Woodward is a reporter. You know, Trump knew about it. He's the president of the United States. The reporter is not warranted with the responsibility of protecting the lives of the 330 American citizens.
He could have printed it.
But he's not responsible for it.
That would have been as effective as Trump standing up there wearing a mask.
But in terms of legal consequence, the president of the United States is responsible for that, not the reporter. Yes, could he have printed it? Sure, he could have. You can't sue him because he didn't. Kat, is there a legal consequence because the president is garnered that responsibility the day he takes office? That's his responsibility.
Not only that, I think.
He could also have viewed the responsibility as being not terrifying the public.
No, that is not a response. No, because what happens? You don't terrify the public, then people die. That's what happened. You don't terrify the public, people die. What's more important? Oh, I'm worried. Oh, I'm so afraid. The American people know. The American people are stronger, much stronger than that. Much stronger than that.
I think as well, it's the way he was put.
I'm countering your assertion that there's a legal case here.
I don't know if there is or not.
If I were the lawyer on the other side, I would say there's no legal case here because –
It was a judgment that
instead of terrifying the public, he'd keep it closer to the vest and see administration could cope with it.
That's true, but the facts of the matter are, and here's the facts of the matter, if he knew about something that could kill people and he didn't come out and do something about it, is that actionable? And you, Chet, and I don't know the answer to that question. We do not know that. You don't know it. I don't know it. But here's what we're going to do on this program. We're going to investigate it, and we're going to find out, and we're going to champion it. That's what we're going to do. And we'll have, we're going to, as we proceed with that, we're going to let our audience and listeners know from legal experts what if there was something that could be done about it, legal, it would have been done. So probably, Chet, you're probably right, probably nothing could be done. But I think it's worth, from the platform of this program, I think we're going to go ahead and we're going to dive into it and explore it and see what people are saying, what people are doing. And because when you look at these numbers and you just, God, the damn guy, he knew about it, for Christ's sake, you know? And you know, what's that line that we kept saying on this program all the time? Wait, I know what it is. I know what it is. I got it.
Oh, my God.
No, that, no,
oh,
that ain't
it. We're calling
that
ain't
it.
It.
That
it
ain't it. No, wait.
Because I love
no, that,
you
that ain't
much,
it.
Baby.
Wait a minute. That ain't it. This must be it.
Wish, and I guess men sometimes don't know what to say.
It will
that's
be a woman.
That's the problem right there. You know what I mean? That's got to be the problem. That's got the problem. Yeah, men just sometimes men just don't know what to say. But anyway, we're going to look into that a little further. What we're also going to do now, you know, we've got Trump also gallivanting around the White House because nobody knows where he is or what he's doing. He might be looking himself in the mirror.
Kamala.
Like,
Kamala. Kamala.
I'm sure he goes to sleep at night, every night, with thinking and seeing her face and saying, Kamala, Kamala. What we're going to do now, you know, he was defeated.
Had an earthquake 18 minutes ago.
You did?
Yeah.
Darren, really?
Felt it.
Whoa.
It was a little bit of a roller, too.
Wow. Whoa.
Evidently,
wow.
We've had 29 of them in the last 24 hours.
Crazy.
My gosh.
Have you experienced any of them, or... I mean,
only one I felt was the one that just happened.
Christie's
small.
Known Donald Trump for over 20-some years, and he led the Trump transition, and which was done very peacefully and very amicably from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. That's a whole other story there. But anyway, so Christie has been very vocal about, you know, come on, Donald. You know, he's owned the guy for 20 years. Let's take a listen.
Whenever anybody loses an election, party, an individual, there's great disappointment. But elections have consequences. And this one was clearly won by President-elect Biden by the same margin in the Electoral College that President Trump won 4 years ago, and by even more, nearly double the popular vote. This election, there's been no evidence put forward that's shown me as a former prosecutor that there was any fraud that would change the result of the election. And so it's time for us to accept that defeat. Also, by the way, accept the many victories we had that night, 14 new House members, two legislatures in the state level switched, and a governorship flip to the Republican Party. We had a great night except at the top of the ticket. And so we need to accept that, and we need to move on. I'm a person who relies on the facts. And you know, the facts are that every one of these lawsuits has been thrown out of court, not because these judges and certainly not the justice of the Supreme Court lacked courage. It's because the claims lacked evidence. You know, I don't think I've known him for 20 years and he's a friend of mine. This is who he is. He was not going to accept losing lightly or easily if losing came. And that's what's happening. But I think most of his friends now have either said to him directly, personally, and or publicly, that it's time to move on from what was a difficult defeat, but a defeat nonetheless.
And I guess as they escort him out of the office, as he's gallivanting
tick-tock,
around.
Tick-tock,
on his way out of the office.
The clock is running to 2024.
What do we have? 32 days, I think it is. 32 days.
Two, three.
Hey, Cornell, tell us about our guest on the show today.
Fernando Reyes. He's a great actor. He's in a movie called, oh my gosh, sorry, Fernando, for saying this, but it's called, oh my gosh.
Close Call?
Oh my God. Yes. And, he'll explain it to you. He's a Latin actor, and he's a great guy. He's doing a lot of things in the movie business and everything. He also is a screenwriter and everything.
Hmm.
So,
amazing.
It's amazing.
We look forward to hearing from you.
I was actually going live on our program on Facebook, on Instagram. I'm sorry.
Oh, beautiful.
And we have Cornell. Speaking of the devil, guess who's joining us right now?
Fernando Reyes.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey.
Doing all right.
Hey, aloha.
Good to have you back on the show, Fernando. Great to have you back on the show. And reading about what you're doing and some movies and so forth. And it's congratulations, man. Things are really working out, and it's always great to see. Good to see.
Oh, yeah. It was such a great pleasure. I had such great news, waking up to great news the other day when I saw that one of the first short films that I ever featured in was on Amazon Prime. So that was a very blessed morning when I woke up that morning to see that.
Oh, Wonderful. Bless you, darling. I'm so happy for you. That's great. I actually saw it on Amazon Prime. I shall be checking that out and watching it, and I'll get back to you with some feedback.
It's a great film, and it was actually a great take on the topic, too. It's a lot about people who struggle with, like, mental health and how much answering a phone call can save a life or calling back can save a person's life. That's pretty much the gist of the film is about, and it was so great to be a part of that.
That's amazing. Okay. That sounds really interesting. And I think our listeners would be intrigued as to check that out also. But what's been going on with you? What else have you been working on while we haven't seen you since your last visit?
Oh, yeah. I'm working on a couple of projects, but even though, unfortunately, they have been postponed due to COVID-19, but I am still working on a couple of pilots and a play that should be premiering in April
here
in Philadelphia. But I'm still fortunate enough to be considered for these projects, even with COVID going on. But
a
couple of things have been postponed because of that. Since I spoke to you guys, there's been a film on YouTube called Their Big Day that's on there that I just started, in which the writer just pitched me about an idea for part two. So that's going to be fun.
Ooh. Okay.
I'm trying to think about what. Oh, and also another film that I was in on YouTube is called Unlocked Choices. And you guys can check that out on YouTube too.
Fantastic. That sounds absolutely amazing. And how are you doing for Christmas? You all set for Christmas, you and your family?
Oh, yeah. It really stumbled on me this morning when I was working. People just kept saying happy holidays. I'm like, I'm just like saying it right back to them without a second thought in my head. And then, It hit me. I'm like, wow, Christmas is really next Friday. Like, it's really next Friday.
Oh, you know, it's gone way too fast, and I'm not even fully prepared yet. I'm ashamed to say I'm not fully prepared, but I'm trying to get there as fast as I can with time running out. So,
yeah, my fiance
trouble
tried
finding coal.
Yeah. I know, right?
For my kids.
I'm pretty sure with everything going on, I'm pretty sure all the stores are sold out of coal right now.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So Christmas is when? Next Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. For some reason, I thought it was Wednesday, and now I'm breathing a little easier right now because I haven't done a darn thing. It's been, I've done nothing. I've had no tree, no. It's been normal. It's 70 degrees and sunny every day. And, you know, just working on the show and doing other things and just haven't, I'm like, oh, man. You know, I used to think holidays would come around and I would say, it's not my fault. I didn't order it. You know, come on, folks. Move on.
Talking about passing the buck, Andy.
Yeah. I don't know. Not my fault.
No, it's true. My fiance, she's really big into holidays, and I'm just like, okay, it's another day. But she's like, oh, where's your Christmas spirit? I'm like, listen, I'm really excited for my kid, but that's like as far as my Christmas spirit goes.
Yeah. Is that typically a man thing that, you know, they're not really big on the Christmas side, that they leave it up to the wives or girlfriends?
See, my Christmas spirit, I guess you could say, died a long time ago. Like, when I stopped receiving gifts and opening gifts under the tree. It probably happened like preteen to early teen years. Like Christmas, when I learned as an adult, like more the body of what Christmas is, where it's like more about spending time with family.
Yeah.
So it's like I just look forward to that, and I'm just a really big family person. So as no. Like I spend family with my I spend time with my family every day that I don't like to put it more blatantly, times like social media is what ruined special occasions for me because you see those people that like, oh, I asked him for this all year, he got me it for Christmas or for Valentine's Day. And people do it on social media for attention and it's like I've always been a type like if I know my fiance's been talking about this, I'm gonna buy it for her. And I'm not gonna wait for Christmas. I'm not gonna wait for Valentine's Day. I'm not gonna wait for a birthday. If I go to a store and I see something that my fiance's been talking about or something that I know that she likes, I'm gonna buy it for her if it's Wednesday. I don't care what day it is.
Yes, that's beautiful.
You know, and I just don't like when people, especially since social media got so big, I hate when people just like they do it as a trend for social media, and I hate it so much. To me, that's why I don't really like start mainstream holidays like Valentine's Day and Christmas because of that reason.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, the way the rates that people post their lives on social media these days, and especially if they're having disputes with family members or friends as well, and I'm like, wow, you know, you're posting this for the world to see, and this is something you're probably going to look back on and feel ashamed of. And it's a bit of a wake-up call to see how far we're progressing as a society with doing things like that and how it ruins so much of many aspects of our lives and others.
Yeah. And you would think something like the internet or social media, how powerful of an item that it is. Yeah, that it would be used for something better, but people are more in tune, they're more drawn into things that are more dramatic, that involves trauma or chaos than they are about celebrating someone or something that's good happening to someone somewhere in the world, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's because on some level it feeds them. It feeds something they're craving and missing in their life. So by creating that and drawing attention to themselves, they're actually benefiting in some way. And I feel for people who experience that. You know, I've had my moments on social media, I'm not going to lie, many, many years ago, but I've learned my lessons, you know, and I just hope that other people do. And but is there anything else you want to share with us, Fernando, about
I would like to ask him a question. I would like to ask Fernando a question, if that's okay.
Of course.
Fernando, I see that you, on your Instagram, basically you're into lifting weights and fitness.
Right.
I see that you're into lifting weights a lot.
Yeah, I'm very adamant about working out.
That's great.
Healthy. Very, very adamant about healthy life choices.
Yeah.
Are the gyms open now? Or there's a place? Was that at home? Are there?
I was kind of on a pink cloud for quite some time because Philadelphia's gyms were closed. Now I live in Montgomery County and the suburb gyms were open. So I was kind of like on the high horse for that for a little bit until the sudden news that Tom Wolf caught COVID-19. So then he shut down all the gyms in PA. So now I'm like without a gym now. Now I'm bored.
Yeah. here in LA, we are under a stay at home order and you drive around. You would never know it in a million years. I mean, it just seems like, I guess part of that's holiday time. I thought we were going to go into some kind of lockdown like they were talking about in March, where they were going to close down stores. I know you can't, the dining in restaurants will be reduced and no more, and everything was cut down regarding bars and restaurants, but stores are open, people are driving around, you know, wearing masks, at least in LA. I heard down in Orange County, that's another story, although probably, I think they're getting better down there. But it's busy as could be out there. It's, you know, I drive around and I'm like, I thought we were a stay-at-home order. What, you know, what? In the meantime,
they didn't close the freeways.
LA has the highest number of COVID cases in the country, right, of any municipality in the entire country. And again, there are no intensive care unit beds. There is not one. There's not one left. And I remember people go to ICU for other things than COVID. There's no beds.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The one thing that kind of sucks about this too is that like even if it's not the gym, there was jiu-jitsu gyms that were open, there was Muay Thai gyms that were still open, people complying with the wearing a mask while they're working out. And that's good because if you're cooped up in the house all day, And then you have that one physical stress reliever that you can contribute to in a day, now it's taken away from it. And yeah. And that's unfair. That's really, really unfair for people who struggle with their own mental health stuff. And now they got to go back to secluding themselves in their house into their own solitude when they have their place of solace where they can go to the gym or to the jiu-jitsu gym or yoga. And now that's eliminated because the governor ended up getting sick. And I remember looking at people in the gym, and when people didn't wear their masks or came in without a mask, I would tell them, like, hey, put your mask on, because the last thing I want is for this gym to be closed because somebody didn't wear a mask. Yeah. And then, look, this happened. What a bummer.
I know. I really feel for people with the whole mental health side of things, and I think people are struggling even harder now that it's not getting any better. No one's really doing anything to suppress this as much as they could be doing. And I think, you know, with having some sort of outlet like a gym, for example, as long as you kept everything in the strictest possible way, people could still work out. I think it would be such a benefit to everybody. It really would.
Oh, yeah. Like, I hate doing cardio. To start on Monday, I'm going to start doing cardio. I'm going to start running. Yeah. I know mentally I need to do something.
Yes.
Yeah. It's getting to be it's beyond that point. I mean, so, you know, I'm looking at God. I've never felt so unemployed since I was unemployed.
Yeah. That's a good one, Andy. I can put down a donut.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Now, give us the names of the movies so our audience can. I want to encourage everybody to check these out. Tell me what the movies. Go over the titles again.
One of them is called Their Big Day. Most of these are on YouTube, so it'll be Their Big Day, Unlawful Choices, and on Amazon Prime, it's called Close Call.
Amazing.
Oh, and also I had another one called Alone, a Lone Short Film. That was my first time doing like a little horror film.
Wow, okay. And where can that be found, darling?
On YouTube as well.
On YouTube, okay.
Are you involved or work at work through Diane Heary? I forget, she's got a partner now at Heary Casting or Heary. Do you know Diane Heary?
Yeah, Heary.
Heary, exactly. Yeah, do you they're still pretty active, I would imagine, yes, in Philadelphia?
Yeah, yes, they are.
So I remember Diane. I was I got some work in the movie Creed, the original Creed, a few years back. And
awesome.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was a great winner game.
I did background work. Yeah, I did background work on a TV show called Dispatches from Elsewhere. I got to meet Sally Field, Andre 3000, and Jason Segel.
It was
a large shoot in Rittenhouse. I spent all my – and then I ended up going to work that next day. When I worked at the post office at that time, I ended up going the next day when we were done filming.
Oh, my gosh. What a transition from one to the other. What a transition.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. It's funny. Going back to Creed, you'll be able to relate to this, I'm sure. There was a few days, I think it was about 4 days or 5 days, where in addition to, like, there's a core group of people. You know how that works, you know, kind of our friends are back. You know, you're doing some kind of feature, line here, line there, but, you know, you're kind of in the scenes and doing different things. Then they'd have days where they have, like, literally – 1,000 background people in the boxing scenes, and they were all on a big green screen. And the greens, because in the movie they show the green screens as being the stadium in Liverpool. But and so there's Sylvester Stallone in the boxing ring, within, you know, and there's several hundred people all around the boxing, right? And these are and they were so anxious to get people to be. They needed people. They were going to take a cane and go out and grab you. Hey, come be in a movie with Sylvester Stallone. You know, I mean, they just couldn't get people to film. Soundstage. So there you've got all these people who not only have never been in front of a camera, I think half of them never been next to one, right? And those Sylvester Stallone on stage, and they're ready to shoot a scene, and you got these people from Philadelphia yelling, Rocky! Who's it, Rocky?
right?
And this is really funny. I'll never forget this. You got to visualize this. It's hard. You know, this is obviously audio, but try to visualize this. The director is telling everybody that, you know, Sylvester Stallone, who was Creed's manager, is going to bend down between rounds and tell him some things. So, but we need to show you clapping and applauding. So mime that. Don't really clap and applaud because we need the place to be silent, all right? So mime it, right? All right, ready and action. So you've got all these people clapping, but their hands are staying about 6 or 7 inches away from each other. In other words, they're not clapping at all. They're not even, their hands aren't even touching each other. They're coming about 6 inches apart and going away again. So they're saying, "Mommy, what's that man doing?" You know, and they have to yell, "Cut!" No, folks. When you clap. Your hands act like you're clapping. Just don't make any noise when you're doing it. I was like, you know, I'm out of here. Creed or no creed.
You mean the movies are all fake?
Worse than you have to mime. Worse.
Oh my God. I just couldn't.
They just made us do this scene with the paddles, and it was just like, "Hey, now you gotta do this. All right, guys, now come around. Now come around in a circle and do this." And I'm just like, "Okay, all right, I'm pretty much had enough of this." So I was just like sat on the sideline until they wrapped us. I was like, "All right, I'm done." It was like 4 o'clock in the morning in the summer, and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm cool. I'm done with this paddle. I'm not doing no more of this."
Wow.
God. I remember one scene where they kept us in this green screen. It got hot as hell. And you know, I'm in L.A. In L.A., they would never done it this way. But they kept everybody in that whole place. That in that green screen tent, it got hot as hell. It was hot as could be. And you're supposed to be – everybody's wearing winter jackets because it's supposedly in Liverpool in an outdoor stadium in the middle of – you know, it's supposed to be freezing. And but there are people. I remember looking at one guy who was so hot, he took off his shirt and he took a bottle of water and pulled it over himself. And I'm like, "Cut!" This is supposed to be the middle of winter in Liverpool. Cut! The guy's fanning himself, pouring water over himself. Woo!
Wow!
This is the middle of the winter. Cut!
That's funny.
And so part of me was saying, you know, folks, just keep on doing that kind of stuff because the longer it takes to do it, the more I get paid.
Take a whole month.
That is true.
But that was a winter gig.
So tedious, though. Wouldn't it have to do it again and again and again and again? I just imagine the director would get pretty pissed as well, excuse the expression, but, you know. Wow.
Yeah, it can take, you know, you're sitting home watching TV or watching the movies and you know, it's you know, as Fernando can elaborate maybe, but you could be on set on a 15-hour day producing a scene you see on TV in your film that lasts 3 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
If that, right.
Yeah.
I remember breaking it down to my feet out there. On their big day, I did my first supposed sex scene on that. Nothing too crazy. But I told my fiance when I was watching with her, I was like, "We literally shot that in 2 different angles, 10 times a piece." And I'm like, "Yeah, talk about being uncomfortable like that." I'm like doing the same exact scene over and over again, 10 different times, 20 different times, shot 2 different directions. And I'm like, "Ain't no pretty." You see that one little 20-second segment right there? That took like probably an hour to film.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah, that's
mind-blowing. Especially for people, you know, the big movie fans out there who don't really know much about what goes on behind the scenes. All they see is these clips and think, "Wow, they acted that really well." But they're not seeing the people behind there saying, "No, you've got to do this, 10, 15 times?" You know?
Yeah, true. Man, it's crazy.
Yeah, like I remember going off to Poconos for a weekend just to shoot a trailer for a film. And that took a whole weekend, and like literally from a Friday to a Sunday, I only slept in a total of 10 hours.
Wow.
From a Friday to a Sunday, I probably only slept 10 hours.
Wow.
It was fun. I'm forever grateful for that experience. I'm always going to be grateful for whatever experience I get on set.
Of course.
But that just goes to show like how much time you're spending filming versus like, because then like it got to a point that even when we got time filming at 3 o'clock in the morning, we wanted like to relax and conversate and chill. Then we would go to sleep to like 5 in the morning, and then we'll start filming again 10 a.m. So it was fun.
Mm. I mean,
I have
it brings up the questions, you know, of you see a lot of reported things in the media about actors who literally turn to medication to try and help them feel energized and stay awake to, you know, shoot these important scenes. And that's hearing things like that puts everything into perspective.
Oh, there's even actors who if they know they got to look strung out or tired, or they'll stay up. They won't even sleep in between takes between breaks. They know they have to be up to shoot in the next 6 hours. They'll stay up so that way they can look exhausted. They can look tired. They can look like they have bags in their eyes.
Yeah, that's
like, I remember the actress who played in The Shining. The director pushed her to a point where she was just hopeless. Even hopeless filming, but it displayed that perfectly while she was acting.
Yeah.
Like she displayed that hopelessness character perfectly in that movie.
It's like The Exorcist, with what the director did to scare the actors there, to get the authenticity out of them and make them jump, physically jump. That when I heard about that, and I was just like, wow, that I would have throttled the director for doing that, because they literally were scared out of their skin.
Man, I remember doing a scene one time. My one only sex scene that threw me off. That actually after this, for good reason. No. But this girl couldn't get her line. It took all day. It took 6 hours for this girl to get 1 2-second line out. I recorded it. I happen to have a recording of that one line that she took her all day to get out. Wait, let me find the right one here. I think this is it right here.
Oh, doggy for sure.
Well, wait, here it is. Yeah, this is it.
Oh, doggy for sure.
Yeah, I was waiting for that, Andy.
Doggy style for sure.
Yeah, that was.
Was that your nickname that she had for you?
All day long. What?
Was that the only thing she was trying to get out, Andy?
No, did you get
two? Do we have all the ladies? Can I go upstairs and give you a kiss?
Yeah, she never managed to do that, but yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But,
that is fun.
We're always playing some stuff like that, Fernando. It's Andy tends to surprise me with this kind of thing.
Not even the sex so much, but, you know, there are days when you just don't want to go to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the truth.
It's our ambiance.
It is. It truly
here
is.
On the show.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Is there anything?
Or ambulance.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to share with us, Fernando, while you've got the perfect opportunity?
For everyone that's on the show, everyone that's listening now, again, watch Close Call on Amazon Prime. Watch Their Big Day, Unlawful Choices, a long short film on YouTube. Be safe, wear masks, and everyone have a happy and safe holidays and take care of yourselves.
Oh, bless you, darling. Bless you. Thank you for sharing that. Just wanted to make sure that you got, you know, your worth out of the show, sweetheart.
No, I'm always grateful.
No, it's always a blessing to have you on here, isn't it, Andy? And boy,
it definitely is. And we'll keep in touch. It's great to have you, a good friend of the show, and we'll be watching your career and talking about your projects as they come out, and you'll definitely be invited back on. So we look forward to having some more conversation. And we're gonna jump right into some music right now. Requested tune. I think actually Cornell wrote me this. Said, "Kate, can you get this on me on the show? I'd love to hear this tune." And it's from Live 8, Wembley Stadium, 1985. This is actually the Live 8 performance of this song with David Bowie and so many others. This isn't the studio version. This is the live version. But we'll try to, you know, I tried my best to make it so it sounds okay on the show. Do they know it's Christmas here on the Andrew and Amanda show?
I think you know the next song. It might be a bit of a cock-up, but if you're going to cock it off, you may as well do it with 2 billion people watching you. So let's cock it up together. Goodbye, Philadelphia. Goodbye, America. We hope you have a good rest of the day. David's going to start it. You ready, guys? Vanishing in our world of plenty.
You know, lying in isolation in ICU for 7 days, I thought about how wrong I was to remove my mask at the White House. Today, I think about how wrong it is to let mask wearing divide us, especially as we now know you're twice as likely to get COVID-19 if you don't wear a mask. Because if you don't do the right thing, we could all end up on the wrong side of history. Please wear a mask.
That PSA presented by Chris Christie, former, oh, I don't know if he's still a Trump advisor, but former governor of the state of New Jersey, here on the Andy and Amanda show. This is Friday, December 18th. Christmas is in a week. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
I know, right? It's so close. So close.
Unbelievable.
It's making me nervous.
I guess we're probably going to modify our schedule for Christmas week. I don't know what exactly. Stay tuned for that. We'll talk. We'll get back to our audience. I guess we're doing a show on Monday, and then we might do reloads after Monday. I'm not sure yet. We'll see. We'll see how that goes for next week. But what I do know is, being Christmas, we're going to play a tune by who? I know
by
who.
By who?
The Who?
By the Who. We're going to play a tune by...
I won't get fooled again.
We all know Christine Aguilera.
We do.
And
not personally.
Only wish, you know.
I know, right?
Yeah, you know.
Would you rather have a man?
No, I would not. No, I would not. I'd rather have Christine Aguilera. But Dr. John teamed up with Christine Aguilera for a performance of Merry Christmas, Baby. Let's take a listen.
Just hold.
Whoa, she has a voice.
Man, that was great. Real great.
Classy. Long yes, Andy, I agree with you on the
All right. Where was I? So what else is next week? We have the Attorney General of the United States retiring next week. William Barr is going home to spend the holidays with his family. He's going to retire, leaving the department early. And he's going to leave the Justice Department, I think, folks, just like he came in, pretty much based on a lie. His lack of honesty and his steadfast refusal to understand his duty to serve justice and the people, not the president's personal and political agenda, will be the legacy of his time in office. What do you guys think? Hello? Hello? Well, anyway, with that, moving right along.
Hello? Is it me you looking for?
Poor guy's going to go home all upset. Because he couldn't make Trump king.
No. Now, who knows what Barr's intentions were, whatever they may have been.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, according to his history, he's all for the unitary presidency. The president is all powerful.
Yeah.
And, of course, Congress is so cravenly cowardly, they're more than willing to let him go along. And then, of course, the judiciary is pretty weird.
Yeah, you know.
So, ever since Nixon...
Yeah, he actually came in having previously been a proponent of the president being above all, you know, in so many words, of course, you know, he came in on that
his
platform.
Entire life.
His entire life.
And he was Attorney General for George H.W. Bush, who didn't go along with it.
That's right. Wasn't he sworn in shortly before... Like right before Robert Mueller conducted his investigation through the relationship between Trump campaign and Russia?
Before the results.
Right around that time. I remember that he stonewalled requests for the public access to the report itself. Remember, he came on instead. He delivered what he represented as a summary, like within a few hours after being released. And now that the redacted version of the report, you know, Barr was ultimately forced to release his version can only be, I think, I don't know about anybody else. I bought, you call me a fool, but I bought the Mueller report. I have it. And I've read it through a lot.
Fool.
You can call me a fool, especially you, Amanda, anytime. I love it. More. I love it when you call
me. Is that the one with the little cartoons in it?
Yes.
The
Red Book
Notes version?
With the little cartoons, the animated figures. But, you know... And I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but I study these things. I do study these things, and I research these things, as a lot of you know who listen to the show and listen to it since its inception. That I counted in my brief review of this thing and reviewing them with some of my attorney friends, that there were 10. There may have been more, but I'm not a rocket scientist or a lawyer. Just a guy on the street who looks at this thing, who reads part of this report and says, you know what? The president of the United States shouldn't be allowed to do this. This is obviously an abuse of power. But Mueller couldn't come out and say it because he was told that he couldn't come out and say it. But anyway, Barr claimed that Mueller failed to establish a conspiracy between Russia and Trump campaign and did not conclude that Trump obstructed his, you know, did any obstruction. But he didn't say he didn't. It just wasn't in there. So that's what provoked the, you know, Trump, no collusion, no obstruction, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't that Barr that Mueller said it wasn't there. He just couldn't come out and say that it was using those words. So that's his legacy, and he'll be saying, what's the word, au revoir? Is that it? Is that goodbye in some language?
Au revoir. Arrivederci.
Grazie.
So long. So goodbye.
Thank you very much. He kept that conclusion of the Mueller report from the public, the real conclusion was actually in the report. He permitted Trump in that time period when he came out within a few hours and said, hey, no collusion, there's no anything in this. So between that and several weeks after, it permitted Trump to come out and make all these grand grandiose things. There's no collusion, no anything, a waste of the taxpayer money, total exoneration. I remember that's exactly what he said, complete and total exoneration. Well, the report actually concluded that a great deal of relevant evidence regarding the campaign's interaction with Russia and its representatives, which was held from the investigators, that was in there. It was in there. Buy it yourself. You can buy it. Go to Amazon. Buy the Mueller report. I'm just telling you what I read. Okay, I've got the report.
Oh,
I read.
You can get it for free. Don't buy it.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying. You know, I'm sure somebody's
you
making
get it for
money.
Free
hey,
online,
buy it. Buy it.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. Really.
I
yeah,
did.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. There you go. Anyway, so that's Barr resigned.
Actually, yeah. I'm looking at Barr's letter here. He relayed two ways in which Russia interfered in the election.
Yeah.
He quoted the report that the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. This is true. The report did not assert that.
So I can't say I know.
Basically, what it did do, though, is the whole Russiagate thing almost reelected Trump. So, good thing COVID came along. We'd be in deep doo doo.
We would be. Hey, the economy was riding high. Stock market was up. All unemployment was down. But you know what's really interesting?
Even unemployment. Even salaries were going up for the first time since the 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what's kind of interesting? That even during that time, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure, as I recall, his popularity rating in the United States never crossed 50% or never got much over 50%. I think it never even crossed 50%, I think.
No, it hardly wavered. It was pretty much between around 45, 47% the whole time.
I thought that was right. I think that's correct. It never got above 50%, and even when the economy's riding high and all these things are happening, he over half the country thought the guy was a real schmuck, because he is a schmuck.
Probably something like 47 approve, 46 disapprove, and the others are just don't even know.
So they thought he was a schmuck.
Well, that's pretty easy. He's been a schmuck all his whole life. He was born that way. His dad was a schmuck. The horse he rode in on.
Hey, that's how you say smart. I mean, schmuck. But that's a new language, huh? Schmuck.
Yeah, don't say it. Spray it.
That whoopee cushion's getting worn out.
Do you know what a putz is?
No.
It's a Jewish expression. You putz, right? It's the male. The male. It's the.
The male.
Give us the Latin. Gluteus maximus.
Are we clear?
No, I'm trying to be. I'm trying to make it clear, Jack. I'm getting there. Give me some time. I'm getting there. Anyway, it's the male. You know what I'm talking about.
I think I know what you're talking about, Andy.
The thingy?
Okay. That's interesting.
Ever bring a woman to an orgasmic response? It depends. Sometimes it can be a quickie. Most of the time, women do need a longer time to have foreplay and a longer time before they reach actually an orgasm. So it depends on the person.
There we go.
It really does.
All right. Yeah. So that's – I know what a putz is right now. So I didn't know – I had no idea.
I do?
All right. Let me go. Let me do it. Wait a minute. Hold a minute.
I'll look it up.
No. Here you go. Wait.
right. It's a thingy.
Yeah, that thing.
I can't tell. Is that
it's
guy
right next to the
schmuck. I can't tell, tell if that guy is ill or he's, you know, he's really enjoyed himself.
I ask the same question. I got to tell you. I don't know.
He almost sounds like he's got an upset tummy or he's about to orgasm.
I think actually that was a soundtrack to an Alka-Seltzer commercial.
All right, that's what it is. Okay.
I can't believe I ate a whole thing. Yeah.
That's what she said.
Oh, that was good.
Oh,
that
was
good. That was good.
Is it true, do girls not masturbate or do girls masturbate?
Oh my gosh, we are settling this right now. Yes, we do. If you don't, you are lying because every girl does. And you know what? Seriously, if you don't, you're missing out on a great orgasm because honestly, once you do, you know the spots. So you can tell the guy, teach him.
Yeah, so you can treat yourself better than yourself.
These people are sick. They want to do it very quickly. And add me into the group if you don't mind.
How do we get to Miss Donald? God, we're going to miss Donald. What are we going to do?
Sure his antics are going to be around for a long time.
I hope so.
Yeah. I think he's going to have his own talk show.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, be interesting.
Probably an entire network.
Yeah, the Trump network. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why you ran in the first place.
Yep. Hey, you know, we're going to play another tune. And the...
Yay!
Thank you. I know people like to shut the hell up. Get your music, would you please? I know what people are saying about me now.
Sick, stupid, ridiculous, obnoxious, vulgar, disgusting, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, I'm not calling you a butt, darling. I think you're fine.
Oh, I forgot to tell you the story. Oh my God! Thank you. I forgot to tell you the story. I'm asking this question about what a putz is, and then I just kind of forgot why I asked that. Well, I'm curious. Anybody know what that is? So, younger, in my earlier mid-teens, I had no idea what it was either. You know, if you ask, I thought it was just an expression, something you call something, somebody silly. You say, oh, you putz, you know, just like a silly thing. But it actually had, especially in the Jewish whatever, it has a definite meaning, and that's what it is. So I went to go pick up my 80-some-odd-year-old grandmother, and who's, you know, kind of fragile, you know, a lot of personality, very bright. And I went to go pick her up and take her somewhere. I forget where. And she's taking her time coming to her bedroom. I said, come on, you putz. She gave me a look that I'll never forget. My Jewish 87-year-old grandmother.
Well, you know, I got an embarrassing story, too, because I've been in that similar situation, okay? So I heard the term dildo thrown around quite a bit when I was younger. And as a kid, you don't really know what these things are. And so one day, out of anger, I shouted at my little sis. I called her, you dildo. My parents looked at me like, Amanda. I was like, what? She said, don't call her that. That's a bad word. I was like, is it? Why? Neither of them would say anything, but then I had to find out on my own later on, and I was just so embarrassed.
God.
Oh, my God. My poor sister. I know.
Yeah, I remember somebody said I was watching a news clip, and they, you know, what's his name? Trump's attorney. You know what I mean? Mayor, you know, what's his name, Chet? Mayor of New York.
Which one? What?
The Trump's attorney with the oil leaking out of the sides of his face.
Oh, the nation's mayor, Rudy Giuliani.
I've seen bits of that.
Yeah. He went and spread all these lies about dead people voting and all these different things. And guess where he gave a big press conference across from a dildo store in Philadelphia. That's where he gave the press conference.
Wow, cameras. I'm sure that was quite a penetrating experience.
He was out in the parking lot, I think, yeah.
He was a parking lot of a dildo store. He was, yeah. It was a shared parking lot between a old landscape company and a dildo shop. And that's where... that is where... I'll play some...
Well, to be fair, they sold a lot more than dildos.
Yeah. Cornell, remind me to play that on... what's today? and maybe Monday's show. Remind me to play the press conference that that he gave in front of the porn shop in Philadelphia. Rudy gave. Yeah, remind me to do that.
I really
but,
want
you know, all right, thank you, my man. Let's get to a tune. Let's get to a tune. And I'm trying to do this, you know, rightly so we stay within our time frame and we don't run over. Let me see. It's, we can do this. All right, here's a song. Let me see.
Shut up and drink your gin.
No, I'm trying to get to a song. Please. Here's a tune. I got a good tune. This is a song by who's this by, actually? This is a song by who is it by? Who wrote this song originally?
What's the song?
Andy, don't tell me you're getting like me.
Odds are, if you say Bob Dylan, you're about two to one chance of being right.
It's a song by, I don't know who wrote it, actually. That's what I'm pondering. I'm trying to think. It's by Emmylou Harris. It's a song that Emmylou Harris is going to perform. I forget if she wrote it or not. I don't think, that's my hesitation. Anyway, this is a performance of the song Wrecking Ball, and I apologize for not recognizing her as the author. I don't think she is. That's my hesitation. But anyway, it's a song performed by Emmylou Harris called Wrecking Ball.
Yeah.
Neil Harris.
Neil Young's Wrecking
Neil
Ball.
Young. Thank you, Chad. I had a feeling you were going to come back with something. I couldn't find it for the life of me. Thank you, man. Yeah. Neil Young.
That was hard to find, though, because it kept popping up Miley Cyrus' version of Wrecking Ball.
Oh, yeah. She's
I kept, when I, when I,
different
I,
thought.
I knew she had a Grammy Award winning album. That is the title, actually, of an entire album she did. I forget what year. Grammy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the life of me, I like the song. I want to get on the show. But I could not find who wrote it. I got, you know, all this, like you found, just everything but the author of the song. You know, did Neil Young record it? Why do I remember him? Did he record it?
He did harmony vocals on that song.
But did he record it himself, you know, as a tune of his?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'll have to look into that. Maybe we'll play it next time around. We'll play the Neil Young version, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. So, anybody, what are you guys plan for the weekend? What are the plans for the weekend?
Christmas shopping, darling.
Yes, he did.
I've got to catch up.
He did. Thank you. He did. All right. I want to look that up. We'll get on the show. Hey, Cornell.
I'm going to stay in the house. It is so cold. I'll probably just chill with the wife and we watch some movies. It's cold over
that
here.
That sounds David. Good, Cornell.
Oh, my gosh.
I shall be kicking back with my baby at some point as well.
Oh, definitely.
Watching movies.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I'll be here. It's about 68 to 70. Oh, we'll be hanging out. I got to see if, you know, I got to find a way to get into like this Christmas thing here, man. I'm just like, oh, my God.
Oh, you know what, Andy? You know how I start to get into it? I want to be real short about it. I start listening to Christmas music.
Oh, that's a good method. Andy's like, well, I could.
And you know, your tree is the whole thing. If you know that pine spray, spray some pine in your tree or in your house, you know, the Christmas pine smell.
Yeah. You'll get into it. I love lighting the candles that smell like that. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'll need that pine spray in my house, especially
after what you did like 50 minutes ago. Yeah, that. What are you doing this weekend after Andy fart?
I think it'll be past Christmas when Andy quits farting there.
Yeah, I was waiting. I was like, this won't take a minute. So, Chad, go wait for the fart. Then I'll ask you the question.
Actually, what I usually do is I watch the classic Alistair Sim version of Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. And, beautiful.
And then maybe the George C. Scott one, which is also extremely well done.
Really?
And then that movie about the kid with the BB gun, Christmas Story, which actually parallel to my own experience.
Do you remember the guy who played, I want to say Putz, that's not his name, the guy who played...
his father?
I'm sorry if he did.
The boy, he says, when he dares the kid to touch the pole with his tongue, I double dog dare you. His name was Putz. Oh my God. My tongue. He's going to kill me. Oh my gosh. It's Artie Robb. It's Roddy Robb's son. Roddy Robb's, he's made careers of, I should have him on their show. He's 90-some years old now. He's a good friend of mine here. Got me the acting business, actually. And his son is R.D. Robb, who played Schultz. That's the name, Dada Schultz, in the movie, original movie Christmas Carol, Who Dares the Kid, a double dog dare you, a triple dog dare you. That's him.
You know, the two movies I love are Home Alone. I can't miss that one because that always gives me that feeling. And the Bill Murray twist on A Christmas Carol, Scrooged.
Oh, yeah.
Scrooge,
I love that
is another one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah. How about Grinch Stole Christmas with Carrie, with
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey. Yeah. That's a classic. Oh, you know what I love is
what's that?
The Express, Polar Express.
Oh, the Polar Express!
Isn't that great?
It's amazing. I only
saw that last year.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Know what I'm going to be doing all weekend? I'm going to go around reciting something like this.
COVID, COVID, COVID. COVID. By the way, on November 4th, you won't hear about it anymore. You turn in the news. COVID. We'd like to talk about COVID. It's COVID, no matter what happens. COVID. That's all I hear. Turn on television. COVID. A plane goes down. 500 people dead. They don't talk about it. I guarantee you this. On November 4th, you won't be hearing as much about this. Here's what happens. November 4th, you won't hear too much about it. You won't hear too much. Tick-tock.
So we have COVID, TikTok.
Well, Andy, you enjoy your weekend with that shit.
Yeah, I wish you luck, Andy, with that one.
Thank you. You know, I've said
what
this,
say is what I say.
Lest we not forget.
Yes.
And Cornell, for you, my girlfriend just popped in the room here. This is for you.
I like my hips to be held, and I like to, like, you know, so I can still move back and forth and, you know, work it, like, twerk it.
That's your girl, Cornell.
So good.
Is that how to bake a pie?
Something smells good. Somebody's cooking something great here in our Los Angeles Coast to Coast studios. That's going to wrap up the show for the day and for the week. Thank you for coming on board and putting up with us this week, folks. We'll be running the show over the weekend. A lot of you hear the show over the weekend on rerun, on the weekend reload. It's our weekend reload, running twice Saturday, twice Sunday. We're back to you live Monday, and I guess we're going to bid everybody adieu, right, guys?
Absolutely. Right.
Aloha.
Have a safe weekend, everybody, from the Andy and Amanda Show, and Chet in Hawaii and Cornell in Delaware. Thanks very much for chiming in. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. Take care now.
We love you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.